Contest of Champions episode number 35, Professor X and Iceman versus Radioactive Man.
Let's get ready to rumble! Contest of Champions.
Welcome back, comic book fans, to season number 2 of the Contest of Champions Live, the place where the most intelligent and, frankly, best-looking comic book aficionados decide who the toughest superheroes are. This is the 15th fight of season 2 and the 35th episode under our belt since we've gone live, but we wouldn't be the best comic book podcast on the net if not for our dedicated listeners and reliable competitors, so a big shout-out to all our supporters of COC.
That's right. And with you, as always, are your hosts with the most, the Clobbering Clergyman, that's me, and the Landscaping God himself, the Canadian Cape Killer. How you doing?
Good, thank you.
Awesome, awesome. And joining us this week is the reason why Ian drinks so much on Sunday nights, Mr. Eli Anthony.
How you doing, guys?
And his opponent, the COC's very own Don Johnson, Mr. Tom McNeely. It's the 5 o'clock shadow and the rolled up sleeves on the blazer. That's what it is.
So. Hey everybody,
how you guys doing tonight?
Yeah, pretty well.
Tom has thoroughly drunk himself into a stupor on the lake this afternoon.
So Every time Tom tells us his stories about his boat and stuff, I always have the Miami Vice theme song in my head.
Yeah,
him skipping across the water. On the
boat. Yeah, yeah. But we're gonna go ahead. I'm gonna set the record straight right now, guys. We're not gonna spend 45 minutes talking about DC on the show. I forbid it. In fact, so
that's the best part.
And you know, and seriously, once you guys start talking DC, I'm just gonna mute you or just cut you off. And so, fights the week, you're going to get like a couple of sentences in, and then I'm just gonna shut it off. So, we're still on a DC fast here. So, I'm kidding. So, but we do have some news, and we want to throw these out. First of all, we have some some news of our own, which is exciting. As the COC podcast joins our friends, the guys from Tales from the Water Cooler, as new additions on ComicRelated.com's podcast network. So now you can find us both on ComicAttack.net. and ComicRelated.com. So if you've never been to Comic Related, you know, there's tons and tons of really great stuff on there. And so go check out all that stuff. And we want to thank Brant Fowler, who's the guy over at Comic Related, who reached out to us and asked if we might want to join their merry group of podcasters over there. So and then also a little bit of more news from our world is that our forums just recently reached 100 members, and that is pretty exciting. So there is a celebratory podcast forthcoming in the works. So yeah,
yay!
Yeah. So what do you guys think
Very
about?
Cool.
Yeah. What do you guys think about all that?
That's
great news.
Cool.
Great news for Comic Attack. Great news for the COC.
Yeah. So yeah, it's
good. Yeah, the more places we can get,
maybe
the...
not quite as good as the news last week. But I mean, last time we were on with all the DC news, but it's good.
No. What were you saying, Ian?
I don't know. You Eli said... made me lose my train of thought.
Sorry,
you said,
buddy.
You said
I apologize.
The more places that we can get the podcast posted and have people listening to it, the better. Because, I mean, we all know it is the best podcast for comic books out there.
That's right. It makes all the other podcasts cry in their sleep.
It's true.
Or something. Anyway, well, in other comic news, this is interesting. Comic book writer Grant Morrison is being presented with the MBE, or the Member of the British Empire Distinction. Queen Elizabeth herself will bestow the honors on Mr. Morrison. And an interesting side note to this story that Ian reminded me of is that most people don't really remember that Morrison wrote a semi-autobiographical comic called Saint Swithin's Day in which he planned to assassinate Margaret Thatcher. So I'm wondering if that was something that was considered in this award. But you know what's funny about this piece of news is that, I mean, it's not like he's being, you know, knighted or anything. Like all it is member of the British Empire.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that's kind of funny. It's like
the title's funny.
It's kind of like member of the comicattack.net forum. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
well, the interesting thing that goes with that too is that when Morrison wrote that Saint Swithin's Day, it was scandalous, and it was actually brought up in British Parliament in terms of, you know, there's this guy out here writing books about him assassinating Margaret Thatcher. So I found it interesting that he's going to get any kind of British distinction, considering, like, you don't see too many people who, you know, sometime on their resume it says, you know, was mentioned in Parliament for attempting to assassinate the Prime Minister.
Right.
And then later on, give them some kind of distinction. You know, it's strange.
You know what I think this proves? It proves that Grant Morrison's magic spells actually work. You know, he created some kind of, you know, magic spell, and this is what he was granted with this. So.
Well, see, I think... Shouldn't Alan Moore also be a member of the British Empire then? Is he? I don't know.
Maybe.
He's a wizard too, isn't he? Maybe. In his own mind.
I think that Grant Morrison just has a huge portfolio full of naked pictures of different people, and then that all kinds of stuff.
Yeah. That's good. That's good. All right. Well, And finally, our last piece of news is that a little bit of sad news. Despite the Avengers movie gathering $576 million domestically, donations from the movie toward the Hero Initiative have only brought in $5,000. Cartoonist John Morris was the one who came up with the idea to donate the price of the movie ticket to the charity supporting creators and their estates. But I guess comic book fans are not quite as altruistic as their favorite writers. So I guess it could have something to do with the fact that you know, we pay, you know, $5 about three. Well, we pay about $3 to $4 here in the U.S. And I guess up there in Canada, y'all are at what, $5?
Yeah, it's $4.99.
Yeah. So the quality of the books themselves has dropped to about 25 cents. So, right?
It's true, right? It's true. We're paying, like, in Canada, we pay like $5 for a comic book.
Yeah.
And lately, I haven't really found that I'm getting $5 worth of entertainment out of it.
Right.
And then
right.
for somebody to say to me that they want me to donate my movie ticket towards these guys as well, I don't know. You know, economic times are tough. Comic quality is not that good. I'm not donating my money to anybody.
Right.
You know, and
right.
I know that's a harsh thing to say, but, you know.
So, but is it just a part of our ticket that we're paying anyway to see the movie?
No, they actually wanted wanted people to donate. Like, basically, it was like, it'd be like buying two tickets, right?
Okay.
So you buy your ticket and then donate the same price of one of your tickets to this, to the Hero Initiative. Which,
well, I wouldn't want to do that for the current crop of creators, but I mean, you know, if this was going to guys that were you know, active way back when and who are on the verge of being destitute now, that I might feel differently.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I don't even remember being offered that option.
No,
I don't remember it either.
I don't think they made it public at the theaters. It was more just this guy's idea, and you know, he tried to get people made aware of it and stuff like that. So
right.
This is a whole different debate, though. We'll have to have this debate sometime about, you know, how much money are these guys owed, or are they owed any money at all?
Yeah.
I think that'd be an interesting thing to talk about.
That would be a really interesting thing to talk about. Because I'm kind of in this. I don't know. I'm kind of torn by it, but that's just me. But
I'm a cold human being, Jeff.
You're dead inside, so
yeah. I'm not torn at all with that answer, actually.
Yeah. I hear you. All right. Well, on to the next part.
Previously on COC, last week we saw Infinite Speech take his fighter Rockslide to space to fight Wolverine on the Peak Space Station owned by S.W.O.R.D. Wolverine's manager, Daniel Brand, argued that Wolverine could slice Santo up way faster than the Rocky Mutant could reform himself. If you want to go back and review all of the witty banter that accompanied this throwdown, go to comicattack.former.com into the forums labeled COC, and you can find every single thing that anybody ever said about this fight and all of the fights that have come before it.
Nice. So let's see what's the count here? I guess the count is 56% Wolverine on the poll, 44% Rockslide, and that's out of 9 total votes. Ian, why don't you go first?
Yeah, so it was a close one in the polls.
It was. It was a good discussion.
Yeah, it was. It's an interesting discussion. And the interesting thing with this fight is that you have Rockslide, who, especially as of late, he's been getting more page time in the comic books. But in my opinion, you still don't really get to see what Rockslide can do. You know, every once in a while, you know, you get a comic book comes out where Beast is experimenting with him and he grows to, you know, 20 feet tall. Or he comes back from Limbo and he's made from Limbo Fire Rock. Or, you know what I mean, something like that. But for the most part, I think what Santo's best known for is shooting his mouth off and making really, you know, bonehead jokes that are really funny, but you know they're really ignorant and that kind of stuff. You don't see Rockslide really fighting all that much, and I think, well, I don't know. Part of me thinks that's a problem, and the writer should address that a little bit and get him in there, and get him brawling a little bit because he should be that team's brawler.
Yeah.
And another part of me says, oh, you know what? Maybe it's not bad. Keep him on the sidelines and have him just be the quippy, fun, big lughead mutant. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I'm not really sure.
Well, he could be both if done well.
Yeah. But he really doesn't fight that much. And and even when he does, his fighting, it's funny because a lot of the new mutant kind of characters, you know what I mean? I know I'm kind of misusing that title there, but a lot of the new mutant kind of the characters, it's funny how writers have taken artistic liberties with their powers. You know what I mean? Like I'm thinking of Warpath, and Warpath, you know, he could fly at one point in time. And now they're saying, well, no, he never could fly. It's just that he moves so fast, it looks like he's flying. And,
right.
You know, Sunspot went from being, you know, just a guy who charges up with solar energy to all of a sudden he could blast solar energy, and then he could fly. And, you know what I mean? Like, their powers are all over the map. I kind of find Rockslide's a little bit like that. You know, you'll find panels where it's almost like his limbs are like stretching. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like he's extending himself like Mr. Fantastic, but out of rock and other materials.
Right.
You know, sometimes he shoots his limbs off. Other times he just explodes. Sometimes he can be 30 feet tall, and other times he's 6 feet tall. And do you know what I mean? Like, he's really inconsistent. So basically, I base this fight around what I know with Rockslide. And, you know, I know I sound like a broken record because I've said this a bunch of times, but I'm pretty darn sure I own every single appearance Rockslide's ever made in a comic book. I love the character quite a bit. With that being said, the same thing goes for Wolverine. And I'm pretty sure I own almost every single appearance of Wolverine as well. Big fan of Wolverine. I think Wolverine takes Rockslide to school in this fight. I think he slices him up in a hurry. I think Rockslide's intimidated by Wolverine. I think Rockslide's slower than Wolverine. He's not as smart as Wolverine. He has nowhere near the fighting experience. I think Rockslide's in a world of hurt with this. You know, I see Wolverine, you know, they go at each other. Rockslide takes the big punch. Wolverine ducks, you know, slices off both of his legs maybe, drops him down to the ground, you know, pops the claws in the head. It's over. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
It's just that fast. And he's done things like that to the Incredible Hulk, you know, who's a similar fighter, but faster, stronger, more experienced, all those things I just said Rockslide's not. So I think Wolverine takes this one pretty handily.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's all she wrote for Rockslide, but here's what I think would actually happen is I honestly think that fighting just mano-a-mano, I think both of these guys, I think it would be a stalemate. Because I see Rockslide kind of firing rocks at Wolverine, and Wolverine just keeps healing. But then Wolverine jumps on him and starts slicing, and Rockslide keeps reforming himself, especially here in this environment. So that really the only way for either of these guys to, I think, to really subdue each other would be to contain them. Maybe not knocking them out, maybe not, you know, killing them, but somehow containing. And so this is where I think the environment actually, you know, plays a really critical role. You know, Wolverine has at least been on the S.W.O.R.D. space station before, I think, or has some knowledge of the type of facility that it is. You know, he's been an agent of many different organizations, and so he at least knows that there is some kind of, you know, containment units and things like that. So on the S.W.O.R.D. space station. So I think he at least would know where to look or how to lure Rockslide in, because he's gonna take advantage of Rockslide's inexperience and his youth. So I think he would at least lure him into some kind of containment unit or device, because S.W.O.R.D. has all different kinds of things to hold a bunch of different various kinds of aliens. So I just think Rockslide in the end is just way too inexperienced in this type of environment. Plus, he can't use – it's not an earthbound kind of place, so he can't use any more rock or earth to add to his own mass or anything like that. So anyway, so that to me, experience is really the one thing that kind of puts Wolverine over the top. I mean, if you break down their strength and their speed and their intelligence and all that stuff, I mean, I think you could argue either way. But I think Wolverine's experience just puts him over the edge, and so I picked Wolverine as well. So,
maybe Rockslide pulls off a piece of his rock and throws it into Wolverine's mouth.
That could happen.
That was a joke.
And then he could reform inside of Wolverine. Is that what you're saying?
I got it. That was good.
That's from the AVX book this week. You didn't see that?
No, I've really blocked out all that crap. What happened?
Thing does that to Colossus.
Oh yeah. Oh God. Oh.
Chokes him a piece of his rock. Pretty awesome.
That was
nice
good,
writing.
Good writing.
Yeah.
Wow. My God.
For those of you that are new to this podcast, right now we're being sarcastic. We think that's horrible, right?
Right. So Wolverine gets the win there, and that puts Dan really in a good position. He still has four of his characters left, and Gid
wow.
Has lost another one, and now is left with just Iron Fist and Mandarin, which, you know, those two characters are no joke. So
two good characters.
Yeah, so it'll be interesting to see. I'm really excited about the kind of the second half of this game, to see these fights. So it's gonna be good.
All right, and so to learn more about the COC, just go back and listen to the live draft or the episodes 1 through 14 by going to comicattack.former.com and look it up on the forum appropriately titled COC.
All right. Tonight's question of the week comes from Moses, who obviously doesn't know much of anything since he keeps seeking answers from us. just kidding, Moses. So his question is very philosophical and deep. So it's going to push us to a new level here on COC. That question is, what makes a superhero heroic? Why should superheroes be good? Why do they fight villains? And what is good and what is evil? And with big questions, and with big questions like this, we like to turn to the encyclopedia himself, Mr. Tom McNeely.
Oh, I thought you were going to ask me when you. I thought you were setting me there.
I was setting Tom up.
Okay, so in the DC universe.
No.
I had to do that, Jeff.
Yeah, thank you.
Well, I would say, as far as making a hero heroic, I would say probably the defining characteristics, altruism.
Yeah.
You know, the idea that a hero is out there to right wrongs, to give of himself, but doesn't necessarily expect a reward. And really, a lot of that changed, kind of starting with Marvel in the 60s with, say, Spider-Man. You know, here he is, a broke guy who tries to do good, but he's always struggling to make ends meet. And there, that was always a, that goes back to his origin story where he was finding a way to earn money using his powers and then discovering that, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. And I think the next mutation of that came in the 80s with the whole anti-hero concept coming up where you started having, say, Batman and some of these other characters. You had the rise of Batman, the Punisher, and characters like that who weren't necessarily altruistic. They were... you know, out to maybe had justice in mind, but weren't necessarily the kind that would rescue kittens from trees and things like that.
Right.
So that kind of blurred the line also between good and evil, where you had someone like Punisher who would indiscriminately, well, I wouldn't say indiscriminately, but who would, you know, without hesitation kill people if he considered them guilty. But it was always his judgment as to whether or not they deserved to die. So that, you know, you kind of had, so the line's been blurred a bit over the years. But I think in the classic mold, you're looking at a hero as someone who's more like Superman, you know, who's just the goody two shoes and is always out to help other people at their own expense and is willing to sacrifice themselves in place of others. Mm-hmm. And I'll leave it there so we don't go 45 minutes.
Yeah. Eli, how about you?
I agree with what Tom said, but I think heroes like Batman are heroes, and I would definitely not put Batman in the same boat with Punisher. You know, Batman dedicates his life to protecting people and to curbing the loss of human life. He doesn't necessarily do it in such a goody-two-shoes Boy Scout way, but you know, Tom and I both have a DC heavy answer. Sorry, guys, but
No, he but, started. Yeah, so he started with
Spider-Man first.
He started with Marvel, so it's acceptable. So
someone like Steve Rogers, who classically has been more of your Boy Scout type hero, also someone like Batman, who has at times been an anti-hero. They fight the loss of human life. They fight for innocence and people who can't fight for themselves, and they dedicate their lives to it. That makes them heroic to me.
Ian, do you have any wisdom to add to the conversation?
Yeah, of course I do.
Okay, go for it.
What makes a superhero heroic? I like how Tom mentioned Spider-Man, because the first thing that comes to mind for me is Spider-Man. And Spider-Man always does the right thing. It doesn't matter what it is, Spider-Man always does the right thing. He's not dropping guys off roofs. He's not throwing extra punches when he doesn't need to. And in fact, when he's with another superhero who's maybe flipping out a little bit or taking things a bit too far, he's always the one that steps back and says, this isn't what we do. And I think that he's the perfect example of a superhero, you know what I mean? Like, who's heroic. I think some of the other ones walk the line and they do stupid things sometimes, whether it be Captain America or Wolverine or whoever they are. I think Spider-Man's a very pure superhero in terms of being heroic. The second question about why should superheroes be good? I think that question probably just goes back to the fact of when you look at when superheroes were first, I don't want to use the word invented, but kind of invented. It was a simpler time and things kind of were good and evil. You know what I mean? You know, you had your good, you had your evil. We didn't really have that blurred middle ground back then. And that was the origin of superheroes then. And we've kind of just taken that archetype and kept it going all through the years. So I think that's why superheroes should be good, because I think if you were to put superheroes in today's world, in the real life world, I don't think you'd see all that many of them being good, to tell you the truth. It's difficult for people to be so heroic and so pure all the time, you know, without making mistakes.
Well, look at Spider-Man, how he's always being, every time he tries to do the right thing, it comes back to bite him. You know, he ends up losing out on money that he needs to pay the rent or for Aunt May's medicine or whatever, you know. Despite the fact that it always works against him, he's always out to do the right thing. And it comes to the definition of morality, too.
Yeah. The next question where he says, why do they fight villains? That's a hard question to answer. The only way I can think to answer that is, I think if I had superpowers, and I think, you know, and there were other people in the world around me that had superpowers, I think I would most likely be the kind of guy that would fight villains as well. I don't know. I don't like to see people get hurt. I don't like to see people do stupid things. You know what I mean? I like to try and be as honest with people as I can. And I think if there was a world full of superpowers, I'd be the kind of guy who would run out there and fight villains. And it'd probably be a stupid idea, but, you know, that's what I would do. Now, unfortunately, I don't think I would be a Spider-Man hero. I think I'd be more Batman-ish. You know what I mean? Like, a little bit less forgiving.
That's because you're rich.
That's true.
You know, something interesting that's always that if you've ever noticed, the heroes rise always comes with or the villains always rise up to meet the heroes. It's not usually vice versa. In other words, the hero gets his powers, and then there's always a bad guy comes around that you know in response. And that's actually something that's a more modern concept, I think, in that. The in some cases the hero is rejected because the fact that they'll bring more villains to the villains will be attracted to them to challenge them, right. And that's maybe an interesting twist on things.
And I think his last question is the easiest one to answer. So what is good and what is evil? I think good is it's easy to see what's good in the comic book world, because those are the people that do things for others. Everything they do is basically meant for somebody else. What's evil? Those are the characters that everything they do is for themselves. It's for their own personal gains. You know what I mean? Like
right.
Most of the superheroes that you see, they don't do things because they get something out of it, because they really don't. Right. I think that's the easiest of Moses' questions.
All right, you ready? You ready for some wisdom?
Yeah, drop it on.
You want to know the answer to this question?
Absolutely.
I'm about to preach. I'm about to preach. So y'all put your hands in the air. Can I get some amens? Can I get some amens?
Hey, I'm Catholic. We don't do that.
Yeah. Well, do it anyway. Can I get an amen? No. All right. Here's
amen.
All right. Yeah. There we go. Guy in the back. Very good. All right.
I'm a good Baptist sitting in the back of
the room. the reason that the thing that distinguishes good from evil is the color of their costumes.
The color of what?
Their costumes.
Costumes.
So,
well, you cut off there. I thought you said color of their skin. I was like, what?
Oh, my God. Jeez.
Gee whiz.
What?
No.
Jeff
says stuff like that all the time.
No, I don't.
Oh, man.
No.
Jeff's going to edit that out.
Yeah, I'm going to have to. That's awful.
Really?
It's awful.
Your Skype connection's bad. I can't help it.
All right, well... Yeah. All right. The color of their
carry on.
The color of their costumes is what distinguishes. But see, now my joke was trumped by Ian, so I can't really recover from that. So we'll just move on from there. But that was a really good question. I mean, I agree with everything that you guys just said, really, and I think that I think in comic books that it's definitely true that. You know, but I think what's also what's important is that it is important that comics kind of reflect real life, and so So it's interesting to me that in kind of those simpler days, things were very black and white. There was very clear good and very clear evil. I mean, like, no one questioned World War II. There was a very clear evil and a very clear good in that, at least from the perspective of the Allies, I guess. And so that was a very black and white kind of time. And then comics kind of over time really start showing, you know, when you get to the 70s and the 80s, that the more people are starting to really kind of question and blur those lines. Well, I mean, really in the 60s, like with what y'all are talking about with Spider-Man and stuff, those lines start to blur. Like the heroes become a little more realistic. There is a little bit more of a moral ambiguity there. And so, you know, things just start developing. And I think so comics have done a really good job of reflecting the society of the time. And so the 80s was a perfect time, and we get things like Dark Knight Returns, Watchmen. You get all of those kind of dark things where you start thinking, really, these are the heroes? And they're not perfect, and they're not, you know, and they do horrible things. But that's how, I think that's just how humanity is. And so the sermon ends with the fact that, you know, if we continue to do good and seek that, then that's what makes us. If we continue to serve and look out for the interests of others, I think that's what makes us good, and that's what makes us heroes. Like Ian said, you know, being self-serving is what makes people nasty and evil. So anyway.
Yeah, it's interesting too how back in the day, like during World War I and World War II, everyone admitted there was a good and everyone admitted that there was an evil. But the thing that I think people didn't do is nobody asked questions. Do you know what I mean? Like they said, okay, good, evil, you go. Okay, you know, that's what you want me to do. I'm leaving, right? That's my job. Now you look at like Iraq and Afghanistan and the things that are going on there. It's funny because people, I think, still see good evil. Like they might not want to say it out loud, but people still see good evil. But the difference now is, and I think it started with Vietnam, was people weren't afraid to start asking questions now. Do you know what I mean? Like saying, okay, we get it. This is a bad guy. We get it. However, is this the appropriate way to handle this? Is this the, you know, and I think that's the new thing is the questions started to come out. And then I think that started to reflect in the comics, right, where there was more questioning. It was less good guy, bad guy, punch bad guy in the face. You know, yeah, I think
the morality became more blurred.
Well, dude,
it wasn't a black versus white. Or well, that's may not given Ian's previous comment may not be the best reference, but yeah, you know, it's not simply good versus evil, but they're shades of gray.
Yeah. Well, do you guys think that we could ever return to that kind of more innocent time? I mean,
no, and the time wasn't innocent. We just didn't know. We just didn't know it.
Well, I meant,
you know,
the,
I mean,
you're right. The time was not innocent, but at the same, but I think the public, the amount of
the public perceived it, that way.
Yes.
I mean, when Captain America made his debut image on the cover was punching Hitler in the jaw.
Yeah.
And that's simple, good, evil. But now we know what the quote, what the government that's saying it's the good government and the good force. We know everything they're doing, good and bad, you know, relative to what they knew back then.
Right.
We know the bad things that are going on sometimes within a couple of days of them happening.
Right.
And we know some of the bad things and some of the good things that the evil guys, the quote-unquote evil guys, are doing, you know. For every story of Americans liberating someplace, there's a story of, but now I don't have electricity. When Saddam was ruling, I had electricity. I don't want Saddam anymore, but I want electricity. And I don't want Abu Ghraib and all that garbage. So it's – I don't think it'll ever go back to public perceiving any one entity as good and the other as strictly bad.
Right.
Actually, I think it'll be easier to perceive someone as strictly bad, but everyone's always looking for the bad in the quote-unquote good guys.
Yeah.
And
the media is finding it, supplying it.
And some of that's driven by technology. I mean, mass media, mass communications are now much more fluid than they were back then. You know, you used to have newspapers, and then and then radio, and now and then television, and now it's the internet and blogosphere and so on, and so voices, different points of view now get more more exposure than they did before. So they're now more, you know, people are able to really, I guess, collaboration more than anything. It's not simply your pastor or your leader, your elected leaders or whatever, dictating or telling you what's good and what's evil. You know, to the people of Italy, Mussolini wasn't a bad guy, at least not at first. He made the trains run on time. He fixed a lot of the problems in the country at that time. It was only later that he was seen as evil. So, you know, Hitler was not elected. He was originally elected to office, and he was not seen as evil initially. It's more of a, it kind of came out from his actions, of course, and so on. But to the German people, he wasn't elected. I mean, they didn't vote for the evil guy. They voted for the guy that they thought would fix their problems.
Yeah.
And nowadays you have a lot more debate, a lot more different voices coming in. So you're seeing both the good and the bad in almost everything. And I don't think there's a way to go back to that, because without restricting to the point of having an authority figure telling you what's good and what's bad.
Right.
Well, it'll never go back that way, though. For me, there's one word that sums it all up, and this is why it'll never go back to that time, and that's trust, mm-hmm. or lack of trust. And, yep. Nobody trusts anybody for anything anymore, and it's on every level. It's not just government. It's on every level. Kids don't even trust their parents the way that we trusted our parents. Do you know what I mean? Like, that level of trust, it's just gone. Like, it's or wavering. You know what I mean? Like, everybody, like I said, has questions for everybody now. Like, and it never used to be like that. You just trusted, right? You trusted your government. You trusted your teachers. You trusted your parents. You trusted the police. And now, all those people I just said to you, you know, there's a million and one examples to not trust any of them.
Yeah,
so,
4 years ago, if AVX had been written, we would have just said, oh, this is great, you know?
Yeah.
But now we don't even trust, we don't trust our comic book writers either, do we?
Yeah.
And when we shouldn't, we definitely shouldn't.
some of them we should. All right.
Yeah, some of them.
Well, that was a really good question, and we got a little serious there. That's good.
Right, Moses is a COC hero.
He is.
He really is.
Very good.
Okay, let's get back to the funny books.
Okay.
All right. In the spirit of superheroes fighting superheroes, it is tradition here on the show for all of the participants, Jeff and myself as well, to choose one fight from this week's comics that we consider to be the highlight fight of the week. Eli, did you want to go first? Do you have a fight for us?
I'll go first.
Yeah, that's
and
great.
Mine goes to DC, of course. It's Batman and Robin number 10.
All right, great. And, thanks, Tom. What's yours?
I love to hear about this. I'm
I know where you live, Jackson.
Yeah, you
I
do.
I don't have a passport, so Ian is safe, but I can go to Georgia. Okay, so you guys are going to hate this, but I'm sorry. It all begins with a Wayne family portrait.
Oh, God.
No, seriously. There's Bruce and Alfred, Dick, Tim, and Damian. And they can't, you know, get along because Damian is a little twerp. Anyway, that's how this issue starts. And a few pages later, after they all get into a little argument and they all the kids run away – Damian calls a meeting between the Robins and the former Robins. So there's Damian, Tim Drake, Dick Grayson, and Jason Todd. He's still in town because of the previous issue of whatever his book is, Red Hood and the Outlaws.
So everybody likes Jason Todd now. Is he's okay? He's a good guy now.
Yeah, they're not trying to beat him up. They're having a conversation, and he's asking Nightwing, you know, why'd you call me here? And Nightwing says, I thought you called me. And then Damian pops up and he says, no, it was me. And he says, look, I'm tired of you guys not respecting me. I'm basically gonna defeat you all at something that you think you're unbeatable at. And Red Hood thinks it's such a joke. He's laughing. He puts his head in his hand. He's just laughing. Nightwing goes, you're going to attack us? And so they all go their separate ways, and the first victim is Tim Drake. He goes to the Batcave, and Damien's there waiting for him. And apparently there's something that happened that I don't know anything about that Tim Drake did when he was with the Titans that Bruce doesn't know about, but Damien found out about because of his time with the Titans. And whereas Tim Drake didn't kill anyone, it kind of blurred the line of morality, and Damien thinks that Tim would not want Bruce to know about it. And so they have a little fight, and Damien, oh, he's such a little twerp. He basically says, you know, I'm going to show this to our father, and so he can know everything about you and know that you're not so much better than me. And Tim basically beats the mess out of Damien. And Damien's intent wasn't to beat him up, but at the end of it, it's a pretty decent fight. He lays Damien out, which is nice to see. And Tim goes, you know, why'd you start this? What'd you hope to prove? And Damien says, it's time for you to accept that I'm a Wayne and a Robin. And that's how it ends. Tim rides away. So, wow. That was my fight of the week. Drake and Damien Wayne.
Wow. Good one.
Oh, thanks. That didn't sound forced at all.
All right, Tom, why don't you go?
Okay, well, I'm going to pull I decided I'd pull Ian's favorite comic and talk about Resurrection Man number 7 from DC Comics.
Oh, my God. Okay.
Yes.
God. Okay, go ahead.
Hold on.
What?
What did you say? What? Erection?
Erection Man, yes.
Your favorite, Ian.
Resurrection Man, your favorite comic.
Oh, Resurrection Man. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I guess given he could wake up with powers that would might make him Erection Man, it's given that every time he dies, he comes like a new superpower.
There's a reason why that book is getting canceled, you know?
No, the people behind Viagra will support it with ad space alone.
Yeah, exactly.
I had such a good joke.
Okay, so it's the issue starts out in Metropolis with the police raiding a rundown Fleabag hotel, and Mitch Shelley wakes up his new powers, his current power set of flame control, you know, going online, and he's like, oh crap, they've caught me, and he's about ready to lash out at the police when he discovers they aren't after him, they're after this basically some armed men have taken over the building, and they're actually trying to evacuate the building. So he comes in and encounters the people. It's spearheaded by a guy wearing a tech suit that with a force field. It's basically, he's got a dumb name though. It's Mr. Untouchable. But
oh my God.
Anyway, nothing can break your shield. It's basically like armor from the X-Men or something. And, you know, he's got a force shield that protects him from everything. And I just got a note on my phone, by the way, that Gid's jonesing for a response on who won. So Mitch comes in to try to help out, and in the fight with the police, a meth lab blows up and sets the building on fire. So Mr. Untouchable is protected, but Mitch Shelley comes in to help. He uses his flame control powers to clear a way to get the people evacuated from the building. And then he goes up against he's still trying to figure out who he is, so he ends up going up against this Mr. Untouchable guy, and ends up launching his powers against him, and beats him up outside the armor, but really doesn't do much to him other than knock him off his feet. So he figures out a way to set the atmosphere inside the shield on fire, then realizes what he's doing. He's killing the guy, and so he just kind of lets his powers lapse for a second, and just, you know, in a moment of doubt, kind of turns his back to him. The guy just shoots him through the back about 20 times and blows him to bits, so kills him. Of course, he then wakes back up, and this time his new power set is a super strong telekinesis. So at this point, he then just wails on this Mr. Untouchable guy, and finally realizes a way to reach inside with telekinesis and turn his suit off. Beats him up, and then uses his telekinesis to basically vent the flames from the building and put it out. So This is actually kind of an interesting fight. It's well drawn. I can see why it's Ian's favorite comic.
Yeah. Or not. Or not. Huh.
He looks like Nitro.
Who, Resurrection Man?
Yeah.
Yeah, the shaggy white hair.
Yeah, like, you know, Nitro, the kid, the guy who blew up the Stanford in Civil War.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, maybe another life he was. Remember, he's called Resurrection Man for a reason.
Right. I tried that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Ian, how about you?
For me, my fight of the week comes from one of my new favorite books. That's Scarlet Spider, and it's from Scarlet Spider number 6, written by Yost and drawn by Stegman.
Oh, yeah.
And if I remember right, I think this is Stegman's last go at...
is it? That sucks.
Yeah, unfortunately. Yeah, he's been doing such an awesome job on it, that's for sure. This book was full of surprises, full of awesome action, but the piece that I liked the best was, and here's a little spoiler alert for anybody who hasn't read the book or is like it and reads his books weeks, months after he gets them. So close your ears if you don't want to hear this. Kane goes to this club, not as Scarlet Spider, just as himself. And who shows up there is Anna Kravinoff, or Kravinoff. I think it's Kraven, right? Kravinoff. Kraven's Spider-Man's old archenemy, his daughter. And he sees her, but it's kind of too late. And she takes out this big knife in this crowd of people and just starts slashing them up. And so he chases after her. And it's kind of a cat and mouse game through the crowd. And all she says is that, you know, all she wants him to do is die for her again. And then she throws this kind of homemade Molotov cocktail into the audience of people to make this big explosion to try and kill people. And it's funny because Stegman draws the bottle of alcohol or wine or champagne, whatever it is that she lights on fire. I just noticed this. Stegman draws it. The name of the brand on the bottle is Yost 85.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. That was good.
I didn't notice that. So then, you know, just blows the whole place up and there's people dying all over the place. And then it turns out that there was some kind of neurotoxin on her blade when she cut Kane. So he's laying on the ground and can barely move. And then she goes in for the kill. And it's a pretty vicious little fight. And, you know, it looks like she's going to get the drop on Kane. And then he kind of turns it up a notch. And yeah, I won't say too much more than that. I don't want to spoil the whole thing. But they fall through the floor. And it's a great fight sequence that lasts, honestly, about 6 pages. Of pretty good hand-to-hand action.
Yeah.
Great book. If you're not reading Scarlet Spider, you should be.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of a shame that Stegman's leaving because I mean, unless they get somebody really good next, I don't see myself sticking on with it. But
oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, I like Chris Yost, but, I mean, if the art's not good, I don't know. It's just not something that I want to keep looking at. But anyway, my fight comes from Uncanny X-Force number 26, and the issue begins with, in the middle of a fight, there's this group called the Omega Clan, which basically they were these homegrown assassins made from the DNA of classic Wolverine villain Omega Red, and they believe that X-Force murdered their family. And because they're kind of homegrown assassins, and so they have all these memory implants and stuff, and so they so one of them has Wolverine and Nightcrawler. I mean, they have them all wrapped up in their coils, and one of them has Wolverine wrapped up, and they're just feeding him all of these diseases, and because that's Omega Red's power, and So Wolverine is becoming kind of bloated with all of this nasty disease and blood and pus and just all this nastiness. And so he's just like, he's huge. He's just this big fat Wolverine, which is a funny way to kind of defeat Wolverine, I think. But anyway, so they let him go, and they drop him off the side of this thing, and he falls down, and And so basically the only way that Wolverine knows how to get out of this situation is to pop the claws and basically pop himself. So he literally just stabs himself in the gut, and all of this disease just comes flying out of him. It's really, really gross. And somehow he's over where Deadpool is. Deadpool is trying to figure out a way to fight these guys, and he's coming up with – he's trying to program his own assassin, and he's sitting at a computer, and he's doing all – you know, adding all these things in, and so all of Wolverine's blood and guts and goo and stuff falls on Deadpool, and he's just covered in Wolverine's nastiness. So I don't know. I thought it was kind of funny. And there's a lot of really good stuff in this issue. Phantom X versus Mystique happens here. And it looks like Shadow King is getting a hold of Psylocke. So there's good stuff coming down the pike in Uncanny X-Force. So if you're not
Batman
reading that.
Brotherhood looks good.
Yeah, it does. I'm excited. So good stuff. So those are our fights of the week. So you got a good little even split between DC and Marvel. So there you go. So now on to the main event. Tonight's fight is going to be a little bit messy, just like Wolverine spilling his guts on Deadpool. Using the double team card, his double team card. So this is now Tom's second card. For those of you who may be new to the competition, each competitor can use two out of four cards in the competition. Their double team card, environment switch card, their flea card, or their temporary insanity card. And so Tom has already used his flea card, and now he's using his double team card. So he's combining two old friends with Professor Xavier and Iceman to face off against Eli's submission. Eli has already used his double team card earlier in the competition, and so he can only submit one guy, and that is Radioactive Man. But Eli also had the home team advantage, and so he gets to select the environment which this will be which this fight takes place in, and he selects the bar with no name as the environment of the fight. It's a great place for villains to hang out. So the question becomes, can the first class X-Men defeat the former Thunderbolt? Let's hear from the managers, and you can help decide. Don't forget that at the end of the podcast, or after the fight, we talk about the fight. We'll talk a little bit about the voting rules and game information. So be sure to listen to that. We haven't had a coin toss in a long time.
No, I actually, while you were talking there, I had to go up and get a coin because it's been so long since we've even needed one.
I know. Slackers. These slackers. Not you guys, of course. The other guys.
Of course.
Yeah. So. All right. So Tom gets to call it, huh?
Where are we flipping this time?
Yeah, hold on. I'm trying to read it, actually. I got this weird penny. Bizarre.
Does it have Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter on it?
Almost. It's a 1947 penny, okay? Which is pretty old. Mm-hmm. And it has so I didn't think anything of it. I just grabbed it out of my wallet. And it has the Canadian maple leaf on the front, right? Which all the pennies do. But then on the back, it's got some dude.
Who is it?
I don't know. I'm trying to read. It's so old. It's hard to see.
Who's the king before Queen Elizabeth? Was that King George?
Yeah, that's who it is. It's King George.
Wow.
Wow.
Tom, you are an encyclopedia.
Tom, just be quiet over there. Okay, so what special little treat here on the COC. Usually it's the sure shot thing is the queen is the one side, but here we have King George.
I'll take the king.
Yeah.
Good choice.
Long live the king. Okay, let's try it. Ah, king it is. King works.
Ah.
So, Tom, what do you want to do? Do you want to go first with the rationale, or would you like to give it over to Eli?
I'll let Eli go first.
Thanks a lot, Tom.
Good play, Tom.
Okay, so we're in the bar. The bar's full of villains. We don't know which villains, but they're villains. A bunch of losers. I mean, most of these guys aren't even B-listers, right? They're C and D-list guys. So, again, they might not recognize Iceman until he ices up. So if he's just Bobby Drake, he's just a regular loser, twerp-looking kid. But they'll probably recognize Xavier, and you know, Xavier may choose to pull his little thing where he masks their presence from the bar's inhabitants.
Well, sure, he fought there a couple weeks ago.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. So he's got an image, of course. No, yeah, that's right. He won. So they probably still don't know who he is. But now with all these guys, Chen Lu, he's a very intelligent guy, and he's gonna recognize these two right off. And there's a few things Chen Lu can do right off the bat. He's not the most evil guy on the planet, but he's not some goody two shoes hero either, and he can just send out some low level radiation to just throw people off. They won't know what's going on. He can make everyone feel nauseous. Everyone in the entire bar feel nauseous right off the bat. That's going to really wreak havoc with Xavier's concentration when he's puking and feeling nauseous. And then of course Bobby will be feeling nauseous too. Then. You know, I can't dictate what Tom's guys are going to do, but if he's feeling a human weakness, Bobby can always go to or organic ice form, and then that would take care of the nausea and the sickness from the radiation pretty easily. But then he outs himself, and it's over. And then Chen Lu can just direct some serious heat at Iceman. And we saw that not too long ago that the Age of Apocalypse Iceman, who has figured out how to tap into his powers way more than our 616 Iceman, got taken out by Nightcrawler and a like furnace that you find in a basement pretty easily. So Radioactive Man, he can make that furnace anywhere he wants. He can turn up the heat right on Iceman's body. And Iceman, you know, he just has his eyes. He doesn't have telepathy. He's not going to have any special advantage to know where Radioactive Man is. But Radioactive Man, of course, will see him as soon as the ice is up. And the heat will win out. Iceman's a dope. I mean, Bobby's been taken out by a chick with a gun before. He's going to have a real hard time going up against a guy like Radioactive Man, who can basically direct the power of a nuclear reactor, a Chernobyl disaster, right at him. All that heat, he won't be able to do anything with his ice. Xavier's over there puking, fighting nausea. He won't be any good. And then we'll have a situation like in that, what was it, Stand By Me movie? Where the guy's telling the story and the fat kid. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Where the fat kid, he drinks the castor oil or something, and he pukes, and then everyone else starts puking because of the smell. That's what we got going on here. And, of course, Chen Lu, he doesn't need to breathe or anything. So he's fine. He's chilling. He's putting it to Iceman. And then he turns up the heat a little bit on Xavier just to put the kibosh on him, and the double team is down. And, Radioactive Man grabs one of his favorite beers from behind the counter, perhaps a Doomweiser. That we had brought out in our last fight, since this bar is featuring Dr. Doom's new Latverian beer.
Right.
Pulls a couple of coins out of his gay-looking tunic, and he's out the door.
Well, that was a good rationale. I would say, though, there are a couple of things that I would differ with. For one thing, since they're on opposite ends of the bar, there's going to be a whole bar full of patrons between them. So any radiation that Chen Lu puts out is going to affect the people closest to him more than Bobby and Xavier all the way across the bar. And on top of which, think about what what we use to shield radiation with. One possible shield is water. If you look at a nuclear reactor, and I think everyone after the earthquake in Japan knows that nuclear fuel rods are stored in tanks of water because water is a moderator for nuclear reactions. And it absorbs and blocks radiation. So Bobby putting up a huge ice wall right through the middle of the basically fills the place with ice. That's going to provide enough of a distraction to shield Xavier from the radiation. Meanwhile, Xavier, I hate to pull this card, but he can just basically reach into Chen Li's mind and shut it down.
He did it. He did it after we were talking about how what a gentleman Tom was. He pulled out the mind wipe. Gah, come on, Tom.
Gotta pull the card. We have to.
That
basically is it. And Xavier, they could put on the. Remember Xavier a couple weeks ago? I had him basically slipping into the bar and essentially making everybody think he was the Vanisher come back to life. You know, they're both bald, scrawny guys. They could do that. Here he's got backup, so he doesn't really have to hide as much. With Bobby there to essentially block everybody away with ice, all Xavier has to do is concentrate for a few moments and put an end to it. So Chen Lu is somebody to mess around with. He can fire off radiation blast and cook both of them, so there's no messing around or toying around like with Mockingbird. This is going to be just a quick brain blast and put an end to it.
Well, I would say that, again, with the Fukushima thing, one thing we saw is that the water, like you said, it can absorb the radiation. And so it's not necessarily an effective block like how lead protects Superman from kryptonite. The water becomes irradiated. And, it's a great kind of a barrier, but not quite a barrier. It absorbs a lot of it, but is Bobby going to throw up? First off, Bobby shouldn't be, but he's a dope. He's an idiot. He just can't figure out how to use the ridiculous power he has. And if he had a brain, he would instantly realize the things you've said and probably use them in a way more creative way than you or I could come up with. But he's an idiot.
He has Xavier. He has the professor there to help him. I mean, Xavier's just gonna basically point him, telepathically, just say, "Bobby, eye shield. Bobby, put some mass between us and Radioactive Man." And Bobby will know.
But what about the people? You see, Radioactive Man's not gonna have a problem making everyone in the place nauseous. But Xavier and Iceman surely will. And again, in what direction?
The point is, where would he put the ice wall? First of all, the first step is to shield Xavier so he can then shut down Chen Liu, and then it's basically Bobby freeze Chen Liu into a massive cocoon of ice and keep it going so that to keep his radiation contained and protect the patrons of the bar. So Xavier basically either nudges everybody to the exits or shuts them down too as he has to. But first priority is the opponent. And even if it's a matter of throwing up an ice wall and shutting Chen Liu down before the villains break through the ice, which these are B-list villains. I usually think of whenever I think of the bar with no name, I usually think of Pastepot Pete and Porcupine Man and some of those guys hanging out at the bar. But
Xavier and Iceman, they're not Cable or Batman. Guys have a brilliant tactical mind. You drop Cable in this situation, he is immediately looking at all the angles and within a second he's got a plan formulated. Now if it was him and Iceman and he was communicating telepathically and just running Iceman's powers, it might be a different story, but that's not Xavier. To think that they're going to automatically put up a defense quicker than Chen Liu can do what he needs to do, and that's open for debate, I would say.
I'm going to pull something else out too. This is going back to X-Men, the early X-Men issues, which is the original cause of mutation was radioactivity. That was Stan Lee's original concept, was that mutants were humans who, remember, Xavier's parents, his father worked in a nuclear reactor, and that was the that was how he believed he became a mutant, was that his father was irradiated, and therefore his he was mutated by the radiation his father brought from the reactor he worked at.
Oh, good, so, good. I thought you were going to bring up Iceman's galoshes.
No, I was not going to bring up Iceman's galoshes. Okay. They served a purpose, which he's overcome the need for now.
Okay.
I guess he was slipping on his own ice slides, but he doesn't need that anymore. I was pointing out the fact that that mutation is tied to radiation. So mutants,
really?
There have been stories where mutants have been, you know, point out that mutants are immune to, well, they claim immune into radioactivity. I wouldn't go so far as to say that, but that radiation does foster mutations. So for people who are already mutants, they generally have shown the mutant race in general has shown a tolerance for high levels of radiation. So I don't know if Xavier and Iceman will be as affected as a normal human would be by Chandler's radiation. Not to mention that generally, radiation poisoning takes a little while to take effect. I mean,
Not to put on enough radiation
to immediately make somebody sick would be lethal to someone with any closer to Radioactive Man. For him to put on enough radiation to sicken Xavier across the room would prove he's killer by in the bar.
There's a few things here. Number one, Chen Lu can direct and control his radiation. He can send it out in an omnidirectional wave, which he's done before, and he can direct it and pinpoint it, which he did in Iron Man Legacy, or one of those miniseries where he focused it on a guy's testicles and basically blackmailed him for information. And he said, "I'm raising." And I don't know the measurement of radioactive units, but he kept telling him, "I'm raising it to 20, man. All right, next time you lie to me again, you're not going to have children ever. I'm going to melt them off." It was just on the guy's testicles, and it he got the answers he wanted.
But does he have line of sight to Xavier and Bobby, seeing as how there's a room full of villains in between them?
Well,
he would have to have line of sight in order to direct a beam.
If Bobby's going to know where to put his ice shield, then Chen Lu's going to know where to direct his radiation. Now, another thing,
through the shield.
All right, so you mentioned that their powers are based on radiation? That's fantastic. Because radioactive powered or empowered characters fall prey to Radioactive Man. He has been able to manipulate their powers and shut off their powers. The only reason he doesn't do it with Hulk is because, you know, nobody can absorb Hulk's energy, but he has manipulated the energy inside Hulk and really given Hulk trouble. Any radioactive powered character that Radioactive Man comes upon, he can shut their powers off because he controls radioactivity.
But the radiation, that's assuming it's radioactive powered. I'm talking about radiation being the stimulus, but not the – it's not – I mean, Xavier's powers are not radioactive in nature. His genetic code has been changed by radiation, but it's not a lingering effect.
And if mutants had a special immunity, I mean – then Wolverine would not be, you know, look like a side of beef some of the times that he has. You know, he's been blasted with stuff and I can't remember what book it's from, but there was one he may have been around Hope, and there was a blast that went off and he says, I need a moment to regrow my face here. I'm not gonna say that there's any way they're immune to radioactivity. They're going to fall prey to that just like a normal person would. You know, now Iceman, he's got added special durability because of his ice form. But again, that's where the heat comes in. Radioactive Man can generate insane amounts of heat, and he can target it. So the second Iceman
Robbie can reach absolute zero. So you're looking at the happy medium between – minus 400
yeah, two,
degrees and plus 400
strong forces going at each other here, the heat and the cold. You know, and
meanwhile,
and again,
meanwhile, Xavier's
Bobby can't reach absolute zero, but AOA Iceman was recently taken out by a furnace, like a regular furnace, a furnace. And in that basement, when Nightcrawler bamfed him down there, Iceman, it was just a room with a furnace on one end, and the door to the furnace was open. And Iceman couldn't do anything because the room was too hot. I mean, that's pretty lame. And,
oh yeah,
and
I would talk about the bad writing
can
for
make,
anything.
Radioactive Man.
I
can
mean,
make
Bobby's held his ice form in the
hot.
Savage Land and the tropics on Krakoa. I mean, he's yeah, you know, he's never had a problem with ambient temperatures being high before. And he's gone toe to toe with the Human Torch. I mean, that's not heat's not a large amount of heat would can counter his powers, but you know he's gone with against the Human Torch, who is no slouch in the heat generation department.
No, he's no slouch, but he's not nearly as adept at using his heat as Radioactive Man is, and he fires heat.
You know who the real losers of this fight are? The poor jerks in the bar.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, they're toast.
Yeah,
they're toast. They're all going to be sterile and froze and suffering from hypothermia by the time this is all over.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. They're just toast. You know, because Bobby, Bobby and Xavier, their first priority is going to be protecting themselves long enough to take out Chen Lu. Now, if Bobby goes toe to toe with Chen Lu, that's great, because that's with his attention drawn, that's going to give Xavier time to probe his mind and take it over, shut him down, and whatever, brain blast him. And Xavier's powerful enough; he could shut down everybody in the bar if he needed to. So
an ice wall is not going to do it. An ice wall is not going to do it. Xavier is going to be nauseous and puking. He's going to be useless until he gets over that. And in the time it takes him to get over that, which he won't just get over it. To be
Xavier,
all by himself facing
Xavier's been under dire circumstances and been able to perform some pretty major feats. So shutting one person's mind down is not beyond his abilities, even puking.
When was the last time you had a puking fit, Tom? Wrenching your guts up.
Well, it's been a while.
Think back. I mean, it's tough to concentrate, and it's not something you have to deal with all the time. I don't know what the nausea from radiation poisoning feels like, but it's got to be horrible. I mean, crap's coming out of your mouth and your nose. I mean, I'm sorry, listeners. It's disgusting. But
that reminds me of that Family Guy, the classic Family Guy episode where they drink the Ipecac and they're just all throwing up on each other. Have y'all seen that? God, I love that.
That's what the bar is going to look like.
Yeah.
That's what the bar is going to look like, except for Bobby, who's going to ice up. Then he'll be made of ice. He won't be puking anymore. Xavier's lunch will be all over his shirt. And Bobby, I mean, do you guys realize that Chernobyl is still too hot? Almost 30 years later, it's still encased below like 100 feet of concrete and lead, and the town around it in Russia is still evacuated because it's still too hot. And all it's been doing since 1986 is smoldering. Mm. Chen Lu has all that power and more, and he can direct it.
Hey, Ian.
However he wants.
Hey, Ian.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of I think the level of quality of these fights has dropped a little bit when Eli is using vomiting as a rationale. I mean,
hey man,
there used
nausea,
to be do you remember the
documented symptoms of radiation poisoning?
Remember the good old days where people were, fighting, with swords and powers and stuff, and we've fallen.
I like how Eli tries to appeal to us too and says, well, when's the last time that you were puking your guts out? Well, with me being an alcoholic and all, it was just this morning, actually.
But I mean, that's just it. You can still concentrate enough to make it to the toilet, right? At least most of the time, or at least make it partway. And that's all Xavier, to Xavier, shunning into someone else's mind is second nature. So all he has to do is maintain concentration for a half second, and and you know he can at least shut off his powers or shut him down.
But he's got Chen's mind in amongst all those other people. And Chen Lu's going to be fighting him. So that plus the vomiting, it's a tough call.
All right, Ian, what were you going to say?
No, just what I was going to say is in while vomiting, in between vomiting this morning, I wrote this script, so it wasn't that bad.
Oh, come on, Ian.
All right. Well, on that note, we want to thank our great competitors for their questionable rationales.
Eli. We want to thank Eli as well.
Yeah. thank our great competitors and Eli for their rationale. So, yeah.
Okay. So it's important for the listeners and managers to understand the circumstances under which these fighters compete. Most listeners probably won't have any confusion with this because the managers were actually pretty good at outlining this in their rationales, but I'll go through it again anyway. Yep. The fighters are teleported into their respective environment on opposite ends of the environment. The fighters have full disposal of any and every resource available in this environment. Fighters are not allowed to leave the environment, but teleportation and flyers are not considered as leaving the environment. And lastly, the winner is going to be determined based on the fact that he or she has subdued his or her opponent. Subduing can be anything from just restraining the person so they can't go anywhere, all the way down to slaying them outright. So,
or making them vomit uncontrollably.
Yeah, I wasn't subdued.
You were not subdued. I mean, yeah, you crafted a fine script tonight. So,
yeah.
There you go.
All right. So, speaking of crafting, there's no rest for the wicked. As next week, we see Eli Anthony again, and this time he's going to be facing Daniel Briand, and Dan will be choosing the environment as the home team.
Both of these guys are kind of at the top of the heap of the game right now. Eli still has Vision, Invisible Woman, and Wonder Man still left to choose from in his stable. He also still has Emma Frost, but he's already played her, so he can't use her again until he uses the others. And Dan,
yeah, thanks for that.
Yeah. And then, yeah, Eli was lamenting the fact that you know, because the last fight that he used Emma in was who was that? Somebody fleed.
Gid, Iron Fist.
Gid fleed. So Eli was all upset and was emailing me because he wanted to be able to use Emma again, and I said no because he had already used her, even though Gid fled. So anyway.
But it still counts until the next round.
It does, you're right. Yep. And then Dan still has Scarlet Spider, Age of Apocalypse, Nightcrawler, and the protector Novar. So so you know, there's some good matchups that could come out of that. So it's good stuff. So so now is one of my most favorite parts of the show, where we talk about our COC power rankings. And this is the part where we take it upon ourselves to rank five characters based on who is the toughest. So, so if you want to look at the entire list of who all we've ranked so far, go to the power rankings section in the forum and tell us what you think. And so tonight's nominees, I love this. I love this because Ian does such a good job of pulling these characters together. So this is a Spider-Man Rogues Gallery tribute power rankings. And so the nominees are The Lizard, Dr. Octopus, Mysterio, Kraven the Hunter, and Morbius the Living Vampire. So, Ian,
you want me to lead it off?
Oh, actually, no. You get to make the final choice, so I'll go first.
Okay.
All right. I love these. I just love all these characters. They're so good. So here's my ranking. I put Dr. Octopus at the top, followed by the Lizard, Mysterio, Morbius, and Kraven. I think Doc Ock needs to be put at the top, even though, you know, it's questionable. In current continuity, he just got beat by Spider-Man again, so with the last issue of Ends of the Earth. But I still just think he's great. And for somebody who can pull off the big scheme that he just did in Ends of the Earth of not only you know, basically canceling out global warming or finding a fix for global warming, which I think is funny. Now they're probably going to sweep that under the rug and never talk about it again, you know. But Doc Ock kind of created this whole thing. So, I mean, he's brilliant. Yes, he's crazy. But he's the his arms and all of that stuff really he's got some pretty significant power, I think, and along with his intelligence, and the guy figured out a way to control six of the most powerful Avengers, and I think that's just really I think that's significant. And sure, he's getting his ass handed to him by Spider-Man all the time, but so are all the rest of these guys. I put Lizard next. Lizard, I think, is kind of equal to Doc Ock in terms of his intelligence, at least in terms of being Kurt Connors. But also, it's been shown that his in his Lizard persona, he also is at least currently able to retain that same level of intelligence. So. I just think he's super dangerous and pretty awesome. Just a great villain. I can't wait to see him in the new Spider-Man movie. Now, you guys may not know this, but my favorite Spider-Man rogue is Mysterio. I just love this guy. I think he's so underutilized and think his power is awesome. You know, I mean, this guy is like, he can just, I just love people making illusions and I think that's just a great power. It's a lot of fun. So I just put him there because I think with the power of illusion you have a lot of control and he has put Spider-Man through the ringer a number of times with that power. So I put Morbius next, but it could be argued that Morbius might be a little bit higher just because he does have some vampiric powers and stuff, but he's also kind of a brilliant scientist and all that. And yes, I did collect the Morbius series when it was out in the 90s. I did do that. I admit, I confess to everybody, I really liked that series. Anyway, and finally, I put Kraven. And Kraven, I just have never understood Kraven. Maybe Ian can shed some light on him for me, but I just look at him as like he's just a dude in like a leopard print outfit and just I know he has enhanced reflexes and powers and things like that, but to me he's just a guy who just runs around and tries to stab things with his spear and I don't know, that's just not very impressive to me. So there you go.
Very good. Our list is the middle of our list is similar, and the bookends of our list is very different. Mm-hmm. For me, my order that I chose was I picked actually the guy who Jeff picked as last. I picked as my first pick. I put Kraven the Hunter as the top out of all of these guys, and I think my main reason for that is it's almost entirely based around Kraven's last hunt. Which is, you know, one of the most iconic Spider-Man books, and you know, a lot of people will argue that it's one of the greatest Spider-Man books of all time.
Never read it.
You've never read it.
That's probably why I didn't rank him that high. It's one of those things I've always wanted to read, but I just never got the trade or anything. So,
Yeah, it's I personally don't think it's all that good. But I'm not a really big Spider-Man fan to begin with. But I do own it, and you know, I've read it and whatnot. But the thing with Kraven is that that book's so iconic because of the way how handily or how easily Kraven defeats Spider-Man, and in the book, Kraven actually lets himself be defeated at the end. You know what I mean? It's not like Spider-Man comes back and beats him. Kraven gives up. Do you know what I mean? And And it's this big philosophical debate and stuff like that. It goes really deep. But Craven, to me, in that issue, Craven showed me that he has the power to easily beat Spider-Man. And he kind of has done that on a number of occasions, too. He's one of those villains that he really does get the drop on Spider-Man a lot. So he's got a lot of... In a competition like this, like a fighting competition, who's tougher? He has a lot going for him in terms of the fighting arena. And I think that given the right circumstances, he could get the drop on any one of this list of five easily. But I understand Jeff's hesitation with him because he is a guy who wears a giant lion vest and, you know, throws nets on people and stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
But he's a great hunter and a great trapper, and he's a great mind when it comes to this kind of a competition. The person I put second is a lot like Jeff's number one pick. That's Dr. Octopus. You know, goes without saying, great villain, super smart. He's beaten up some of the best villains. You know, tough competitor all around. Next I put is Mysterio. I think Mysterio is one of those guys that he could be almost anywhere on this list with his illusions and the way that he works that. If he was fighting just these five guys, not anybody else on the list, but just these five, I think he could, you know, I could see an argument for him being number one because he could probably easily trick these guys. But I have him down at number three because in the grand scheme of things, you know, Spider-Man does end up taking care of Mysterio. Next, I put Morbius. He's a lot like Mysterio. I think he could go anywhere on this list as well. Very powerful, very strong, you know, quick. He's got a lot going for him. But he's a lesser known character that does tend to get taken out. So I have him second last on my list. Last on my list, I put the Lizard. Lizard, cool character. Love him. He's great and all. But he is really, he's a lot like a lot of Spider-Man's other villains that he fights, like Vermin and all of those kind of guys. And they all seem to be different animals. Like they're the same character, different animals.
Right.
You know, one's the Jackal, one's the Rat, one's the Lizard.
Stegron.
So I kind of put him into that category. He hides in the sewers. He seems more interested in running away than fighting, you know, kind of wants to live his own life and stuff like that. He's very powerful, don't get me wrong, but he's last on my list.
All right.
Tom, did you have any ideas on this? Do you want to chime in?
Yeah, I kind of had a blend of both of yours because I had Doc Ock as my first. Because as Jeff said, he's just really powerful. His arms make him give him a lot of reach, and he's just always been, to me, a very formidable character. I had Kraven second, and it's because he is a master hunter. He, as Ian was saying, he can get the drop on everybody, and he understands the psychology of his opponent. So it's a matter of not only being powerful, but being able to outwit. And he can come into any situation and find the way to get the better of whoever it is he sets his sights on. I put Morbius third because he does have a lot in terms of raw power. He kind of outclasses most of the other guys on this list. You know, in terms of his strength and speed and the fact that he can suck blood and so on and so forth.
he can suck blood.
And then I had Mysterio fourth because, as Ian said, he can go kind of anywhere on the list because it depends on how well his illusions are working that day. I don't know Mysterio as well as the others. I've seen a few of his stories over the years, but I think he's pretty formidable. But I kind of place him toward the bottom just because I think the other guys had more kind of more oomph in there. And then I put Lizard last because even though he's, you know, really strong and smart and dangerous, to me he's more of a Killer Croc type, and he's you know, and compared to these other guys, I think Lizard just kind of falls by the wayside on my rankings. So that's that was my list.
All right, Eli, how about you, man?
I had Doc Ock number one, for all the reasons really you guys have said, and he's got the brains and he's got some real good physical powers. Morbius, he's super powerful. He's number two for me. I got Kraven number three. I think Kraven, a lot of what Kraven does depends on preparation. And so, you know, if he has time and he's familiar with his opponent, then and he ha- so if he's already studied and worked up like a dossier on someone and how to come at them, then he's effective, like what he does with Spider-Man. But if you just if he didn't know who Spider-Man was and you took an arena and you just dropped Spider-Man on one end and Kraven on the other, Spider-Man owns that guy 9 times out of 10, 99 times out of 100 probably. But Kraven's does have some real good skills. So I got him third. I got Lizard fourth. Lizard's got the strength, and he's, you know, when he's Connors, he's got the mind. Mysterio, he's kind of like Kraven with the preparation aspect, but even more so. I mean, Mysterio doesn't have any powers, right? He just puts his illusions together. I mean, they're fantastic. And then recently, they tricked Spider-Man and Silver Sable and Black Widow for a while. He faked a whole town being – a whole countryside being destroyed. I mean, it was pretty awesome. But you can't do that without loads of preparation and resources. And if
yeah,
you just put him –
he's a special effects artist. It's not like Mastermind who can just create whatever he thinks. It's – yeah, as you
right.
said, it's a special
it.
Effect.
So if you put him in a boxing ring or in an arena with any of these other guys, they're going to win, hands down. But if you said – and that's how I see the power rankings, like a straight-up fight. But if you said, hey, in 3 weeks' time, Mysterio, you're going to have to take out all these other guys and you know, it's going to be in New York City. Mysterio could very well come out on top, but that's not how I see the power rankings.
Right.
Just mano a mano, Mysterio's dead last for me.
Just looking at all of our answers, what's interesting is that we all picked a different number two person. That's just funny.
Oh yeah.
So, well, Ian, what does that put us at in the numeric ranking? Are you there, Ian?
Sorry, I was on mute.
Oh.
I didn't want people to keep typing, so I was sitting there talking, but I was on
okay.
mute.
Okay.
In the numeric rankings, for those of you new to the podcast, what that means is we look at them based on assigning points to rankings. So first place gets 5 points and so forth. Last place gets 1 point. According to all four of our numeric rankings, Dr. Octopus actually fared very well and received 19 out of possible 20 points. So he's the clear number one winner out of the four of us. Second place in the numeric rankings is Kraven with 13 points, then Morbius with 11 points, Mysterio with 9, and the Lizard comes in last with 8.
All right. So where are you going to rank these guys?
I see them low. I see them
yeah,
very low.
Me too.
You know, they're great characters and all, but they like, let's be honest, these guys are all punching bags. They're all, you know, they all did their main purpose in the Marvel 616 universe is to get beat up. So I see Dr. Octopus falling below Black Panther is where I put him. Because I look at the guys above Black Panther, you've got Daredevil, Gambit, Shang-Chi. I think those guys would take down Dr. Octopus.
Uh-huh.
But then you look at the characters below Dr. Octopus on our list, the Surge, Husk, Sunspot, Anole, Wolfsbane. Those characters, I think Dr. Octopus can take them out. So I see these characters falling into that grouping there. Pretty much all of them going in above Surge, with the exception of, I'd say, maybe the Lizard I would put below Surge. The Lizard I would put, you know what? Honestly, I think I'd put the Lizard really low. I'd put the Lizard below Falcon.
Wow, really?
Yeah, but above Blob.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you put the other three guys there with where you put Dr. Octopus?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, with Doc Ock.
So it would be Kraven. Kraven.
Morbius.
Kraven, Morbius, Mysterio. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
Very good. Very good.
So thank you for everybody for listening to episode 35 of COC Live. Go to comicattack.former.com under COC to vote for who you think is the most deserving to win tonight's fight. If you have any questions that you'd like to have answered on the show, add them to the Ask the COCers thread on the forum. We'd love to see millions of people arguing the fights in the forum, so feel free to post in the fight thread. Don't feel as though, you know, just the fighters, or pardon me, just the managers, Eli and Tom, they're not the only ones allowed to post in there. If you want to throw something, your 2 cents, then please jump in there and chat away in there, right? We'd love to see lots of new faces and voices in there. Also, look for us on Twitter at COC Comic Attack. Like Contest of Champions on Facebook. And, of course, like Jeff mentioned earlier, check out our newest affiliate, comicrelated.com, who will be posting Contest of Champions from here on out, along with some other great podcasts from our friends, like Tales from the Water Cooler and Discussions with Decapitated Dan.
All right. Well, we record every Sunday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Time, so be sure to get your votes in before then, because those are the only ones that will count. After I do some editing work, I've posted the fights, and so we will be up on Comic Attack on Tuesday and probably on Comic Related on Wednesday. And but we're still working out those details. So anyway, want to give a big thanks to Eli and Tom. Very good job, guys, and always a lot of fun to hear you debate. And thanks also to my awesome co-host Ian, and most of all, thanks to all you guys out there who are listening. For all of us at COC, have a great week.
See ya
later.
Bye.
Let's get ready to rumble.
Contest of Champions, episode number 35.